I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, a show about video game. Video games, what do you know? Video games is what we talk about. We are going to be talking about Blizzard Entertainment, the GeForce Now, which is launched. It's available. Rockstar, Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, bunch of financial and other information. It's going to be really interesting, I promise. I promise it is going to be interesting. And I'm Patrick Beja. And we could have started with other things than Blizzard and the Warcraft 3 Reforged controversy, but I figured since we have Nick, also known as Taliesin from the Taliesin and Evitel Wondrous Wisdom Show weekly reset channel, Taliesin and Evitel, let's start with Blizzard. Hello, Taliesin. How's it going?
Hello, Patrick. It's lovely to be here. Thank you. I'd like to add a little caveat to your introduction in that I can't guarantee it's going to be interesting, but I'm going to try my best, as always. No half measures here. Nuh-uh. There's a smorgasbord to talk about today. I'm actually really excited about it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of interesting stuff. And just to be clear, you are still baby-free at this point.
At this moment, although I can't guarantee for how much longer, if suddenly you hear wailing and crying in the background, that's not a baby. That's my wife.
That's what your
wife. I might
wife
have to go and deliver it myself. And I'll try and keep on talking as I do so. But just bear in mind that there'll be some background noise, okay?
Fair enough. Thank you very much for your commitment to Pixels. I appreciate it. We're still a few weeks away from the baby coming, so it should be okay. We'll do our best.
Yeah, we're both very excited because we need a tank, you know, so.
and when you say both, you mean me and you. So that should be.
Yes. <yeah. laughs>
All right. Blizzard Entertainment and the, do you say vicissitudes in English or is that a French word?
I mean, cleverer people than me, Mike Patrick, but I can't say I've ever gone down that road.
So let's not. Let's be safe. It might be treacherous, as is the road to everything, really, having to do with Blizzard these days. So a couple of very quick notes before we get into the Warcraft 3 Reforged issues. Gears of War studio head, the Coalition studio head, his name is Rod Ferguson, is leaving the Coalition, so Gears of War, and joining Blizzard to head the Blizzard franchise.
Diablo franchise.
Oh, yes, the Blizzard. Yes, sorry, the Diablo franchise, obviously, which is, it's an interesting move. Because, well, let me ask you, what do you think of this move?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm impressed that, you know, anyone would make that move at the moment, because as we're going to find out when we start talking about Warcraft 3 Reforged and everything else around it, I feel like it takes a brave man to step into the Blizzard breach at the moment. It's kind of like a guarantee of abuse and harassment and, you know, some would say not unjustifiably so, but just a lot of flack coming your way. And I don't think Diablo 4 is going to be much different, just because that's just people's attitude with this certain company at the moment, for good or for bad.
I mean, there will always be people unhappy, but he's not going to be on the front lines, I don't think. He's going to head the Diablo franchise as a whole. So Diablo 4, Diablo Immortal, probably some other things in there as well at some point. And also, you're talking about courage. Having headed the Gears franchise, he's got, you know, he's like rushing into battles to fight the swarm with Dom at his side. Like he's a buff That's not how it works, right?
That's definitely how it works. No, okay. It's definitely how it works. And whatever franchise you look after, it impacts your physical form and daily routine. Everyone knows that. So, again, he's a brave man taking on the Diablo franchise in that case.
Indeed.
Trailer still gives me nightmares, Patrick.
it's interesting because I've seen a lot of people comparing Gears and where it's been in recent years and sort of drawing conclusions to what it means for Diablo. I think I would have had the same reaction, but the reality is Blizzard is very much made of people from other studios. Not everyone at Blizzard was there from the beginning. Actually, very few people at Blizzard were there from the beginning because it was a tiny place. And so if you look at the people who have been heading successful games and franchises at Blizzard for the past 15 years, most of them come from the rest of the industry. So he's a highly qualified person. I doubt he's all of a sudden going to replicate what was happening with the Coalition and Gears of War for Diablo. But it's just there are tons of people who came from other studios before, and Blizzard... At least, I think it's debatable how it's going now at Blizzard, but at least for a good while there was a special place because people who came there from other places were made part of the Blizzard way of things and were, some big successes, some less big successes, but mostly they adopted there was a Blizzard touch. And when they left Blizzard, many of them did not manage to replicate that Blizzard touch in other companies and with other initiatives. So I don't think the fact that he comes from the Coalition, and before that he had a hand in other franchises, it doesn't really mean much other than he's an industry veteran, as many other people who joined Blizzard have been before. So
that's interesting because that's not quite the mindset that I'm seeing a lot of reaction to this online, because I think what you're saying is absolutely true. It used to be a case of when people come from other big franchises or other big companies, it was almost a case of, hey, lucky them, they get to work on Blizzard stuff and sort of improve and be part of this whole thing. I feel like there's much more an attitude amongst close Blizzard watchers, which I'd have to say I am, that at the moment when people come from other franchises, when a writer comes from CD Projekt Red to come and work in WoW or something like that, there's much more a sense of, oh good, we need this guy. and the expertise he can bring and what can he change to make it more like this other thing that they were on and that they were working on before, which is maybe a slight change and maybe kind of represents Blizzard's standing amongst gamers at the moment, in that it used to be a case of this lucky person coming to work for Blizz, and now it's much more a case of, oh, we're lucky to have this person from Gears of War or this person from CD Projekt Red, and that's been a noticeable kind of change over the last couple of years, I think.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I do think it represents the attitude of the player base a lot more than the actual people going to work for Blizzard.
Oh, certainly.
I think amongst the young ones, there's a lot of, oh, I get to work for Blizzard, this is awesome. Again, arguably maybe more before than there is now. Although, for the higher up executives and studio heads and things like that, it's a bigger part of a business decision. I'm sure that Ferguson is getting paid a lot and probably more than he was at the Coalition. Just lateral moves and well, not lateral, but you change companies and salary is a big part of that. And it's a big, when you're at those levels, it's a lot of management. It's not like you sit around in a room playing games. It's a lot of work and it's administrative, and even game design is fun, but it's work. So yeah. I don't know how much that plays into it. Probably, I think, a little bit less than for young, strappy programmers or artists that are like, oh my God, I get to draw Thrall all day, things like that.
I think being in charge of Diablo has to be one of the biggest jobs in games right now. With this sort of imminent release of Diablo 4, and probably one of the longest contracts in games as well. I mean, you know, thinking from job security, it's like, well, I'm in charge of Diablo. You know, my main job at the moment is probably to get Diablo 4 out. I've got till like 2025 to do that. This is going to be great. I can really settle down here in Anaheim. It's going to be fantastic.
Indeed. All right. And yeah, just to be clear, we don't know exactly what his responsibilities are going to be, but there is a game director for Diablo 4 itself. So heading the franchise is probably more of a overarching management role. I don't think he's going to go and even executively produce. I'm sure he's going to have stuff to say, but he's not going to be directly in charge of that game. It doesn't seem like so.
No, but it'll be the biggest plate on his table, you'd have thought.
For sure, yeah. And yeah, it's going to be an interesting a few years for him, because Diablo is one of the biggest franchises in gaming, and it's in such a weird place right now. Still waiting for to hear from Immortal. I'm actually looking forward to that as well.
So. Every now and then I just remember Immortal again, and I'm like, oh yeah.
Oh, there's this Another thing we also remember every now and then, and that we're going to be remembering a little bit more in the next few days for those who like it, is the Overwatch League, which goes hand in hand. See, I told you. Blizzard has signed an exclusive deal with Google, with YouTube, to stream the Overwatch League along with all of their esports tournaments, all of their esports anything really, which goes again hand in hand with a reverse deal for Blizzard to use Google's cloud services. They were using Amazon, I believe, mainly. I don't think that's very widely publicly known, but I've heard rumblings that is what they were using until now. So they're going to be transferring to Google. That is not, I think it's a mix between proprietary and cloud services. So I don't know if they're transferring everything to Google as a cost/technology decision. That's not very clear. I guess we'll know at some point. But the important thing is they are ditching Twitch entirely and going to Google, to YouTube, for all of their live streaming needs for all of their esports events, for all of Activision Blizzard. It's not just the Overwatch League, but probably the Overwatch League is a little bit more visible because they're going big on it, but it also happens for Call of Duty, Hearthstone, all of those. So good choice, bad choice, what do you think?
I think it's a fascinating choice, and it's one that I'm kind of obsessed with at the moment, because I don't know if it's good or not, and I really want to see how it plays out. I suspect in the long run, it might be quite good for Blizzard, and certainly good for YouTube, and in my line of work, this is obviously a thinking as well. I think if I was one of the casters or creators working on those things, I'd be face palming incredibly hard now, and just going, why would you do this to me? Why would you move me off Twitch and put me onto YouTube? And so that is the biggest problem that I see with it. But I think it's good to be diversifying in sort of live streaming services, and I'm as someone who primarily makes their work on YouTube in video form, I'm fascinated to see how that goes.
Yeah, it's
what do you think? Because I can't come down one side or the other on it. Some days I wake up and it's the worst idea that's ever happened, and it'll be the death of all of these esports. And sometimes I wake up and it's this brave new frontier, this brave new world, which I'm incredibly excited about.
I think there is an argument to be made that they could be on both. But then obviously they wouldn't get the piles of money that YouTube is paying them to be exclusive on their platform. The big question for the player base is going to be the reach, and are people going to switch from Twitch to YouTube for watching streaming content? I wonder if the Overwatch League is enough of a draw to get people, like how many people watching the Overwatch League were specifically tuning in to wherever it was streaming to watch that, and how many people were watching because it happened to be on Twitch and they like Overwatch, they know Twitch, they're on Twitch regularly anyway. so they would watch that. I think there's little doubt that the viewership numbers are going to go down.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that is, I mean, the people who tune in to watch, of which I am a part of, to watch, it doesn't really matter where it is, are going to watch anyway on YouTube. But there are definitely additional people who were on Twitch and who were like, okay, I'll watch this since it's showing now. I wonder if YouTube, if we can see, that is a question I don't have the answer to. YouTube being a bigger platform for gaming in general, not for streaming, obviously Twitch is the biggest platform for for streaming. I wonder if YouTube being a bigger platform for gaming in general is going to have somehow positive impact on that. Maybe.
Well, that's the thing. It's not like there isn't an audience there on YouTube who are there specifically for gaming content. And as someone who makes content on the platform, it's not like that audience isn't willing to kind of watch content that's there and try new content when it kind of appears. Obviously, that hasn't transferred into their live streaming so much. But then there's not that many people willing to make that jump and to take the risk on it. Having said that, I know people who live stream Overwatch and Warcraft and other Blizzard games on the platform and do very well. And you know, make their living out of it, which is, I guess, all you can ask for.
There are people who are pro streamers on YouTube specifically.
Yeah, and who came from Twitch. So they're bringing an audience with them to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. I don't really know anyone that's started from scratch on the platform, but I know people that have made the move over and bought their audience, but a sizable proportion.
Do you know why they would choose YouTube over Twitch? It seems like Twitch is really, and we've seen these kinds of competitive moves on streaming platforms, obviously with Mixer and YouTube and Facebook gaming even. So this is another kind of chess move in that giant chess game that is happening in streaming at the moment. But do you know why anyone would choose to leave Twitch for YouTube gaming to stream, which seems to everyone, I think, like a lesser platform?
Yes. So the big one is Panzer Trade Chat, who was quite a big YouTube creator, and was at the forefront of World of Warcraft streaming. Like, you know, back when it was just in TV, you know, she was there from the very dawn of it, and one of the doesn't quite get the credit she deserves, really, for being a trailblazer in that. She left the platform for a couple of reasons. She felt like they weren't giving her a fair deal on revenue split, and YouTube just offered her a better deal. And secondly, the fact that on YouTube, comments and profiles and followers aren't anonymous. So there's a lot more kind of responsibility and
accountability.
Yeah, accountability. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. And as I guess a female in gaming who can occasionally get targeted by a certain element, that was very appealing to her. Mm. Oh, I can't say I blame her.
Yeah, obviously.
And she's much happier there as well.
And she's doing well on YouTube.
Oh yeah, I mean she's a big fish in a smaller pond, but she's doing great.
Well, that's so possible. Good to hear. Yeah, I guess maybe we'll see. We'll see. I think again, the maybe the best course of action would be to stream everywhere, and I'm sure a lot of people are thinking, why wouldn't you stream everywhere? It might be a short-sighted decision to get a pile of money from YouTube and Google to do that, because then you limit your reach. But it's possible that YouTube actually, for gaming, has a significantly bigger reach in a more casual audience. I don't know that it can be transferred over to the Overwatch League, though, and that's it's starting in a few days. So, yep.
Evertel is shouting at me now. I'm an idiot. Panzer actually went to Facebook, not YouTube. That's my business. Yeah, yeah. Okay. And look, okay. The point is the same. If you can do it on Facebook, you can do it anywhere. All right.
Someone should put that in a song. All right, let's talk about And we should really tell women not to interrupt when serious people are talking. So
I know my sandwich is going to take ages to come now.
That is unacceptable. She's already busy making a baby. What more can we? All right, I'll stop there. Hi, Evitel. Hello. So Warcraft 3 Reforged. This is a, to me, a pretty big deal. For those who don't know, Warcraft 3 Reforged is the remastered version of Warcraft 3, a very important game in Blizzard's history, a RTS, a real-time strategy game. It was announced at BlizzCon 2018, and they talked about it a little bit at BlizzCon 2019, and it was supposed to come out late 2019. It was delayed by about a month and released about 10 days ago at the end of January. There were a number of issues with that release. I'm going to try to list a few of them and then we can discuss. First of all, one thing which we'll talk about at the maybe later in the discussion is the issues with mods. They are a lot more restrictive with the way mods work with the new version than they were in previous versions. They kind of aligned their policies with what was happening on StarCraft 2 remastered. StarCraft 1 remastered. And it is a lot more restrictive. You can't use other companies or people's IPs. You can't do import or create models or buildings yourself. And Blizzard owns everything you create. At least that's what they say in the text. We'll talk about this in a second. Mm-hmm. The more important aspect to me is the bungled aspect of Blizzard, of the game when it was released. They have removed the ability to play, essentially, Warcraft 3 Classic, even if you had bought it on Battle.net. I mean, if you have the old discs, you can still install it, but nothing online is available on that version. And if you have it installed on your computer from Battle.net, then it switched you to a slightly different version of Reforged. So Reforged is now the only version of Warcraft 3 that exists, even if you had bought the original one on Battle.net before. I think that wouldn't be a tremendously huge issue. I can understand that, you know, they made a pristine version of the new one. They want everyone to be on the same code base and not have to maintain 15 different versions. Okay, fair enough. Except there are issues with the current one, with the Reforged version. And even more than that, there are functionalities, especially online, that have been taken away from this version. So essentially, it's things like ranked, clans. I'm not exactly, like, the details don't really matter all that much, but it's significant parts of the online experience that aren't available on Reforged. And you can't play the classic version where those were available anymore because it's actually being taken away. There are also technical issues like the fact that parts of the animation on the characters, on the units, is capped in frame rates. It's 30 FPS only. In a game that is supposed to be the definitive reimagining of technical excellence of a classic game, I think that is pretty unacceptable. It might be because the models are so complex that they can't animate them fast enough on smaller rigs, or even on bigger rigs, because they could have unlocked it. But then, you know, either delay it a little bit more to fix it, to optimize it, or change the models. Don't create models that are so complex, if that's even the issue, that you can't animate them properly. There's that. There is a number of other issues, but to me, the biggest problem is that all of this was not communicated. Some of it they are arguing was communicated at BlizzCon 2019 in a somewhat obscure panel. But things like one of the bigger issues, the recreated in-game cinematic that was part of the big splash announcement of 2018 as a completely rethought camera placement, animation, like it felt like a much bigger deal of a cinematic, has been reverted to essentially what it was in the original game with the nicer models. And in some of the later communication, they were saying, you know, we don't want the game to feel too far from the original one. But that was very, like, you really had to dig for specific information about the game to even be aware of this. And they had said they would give the same treatment to all of the in-game cinematics. And they ended up doing it for none of them, including the one that was present at the announcement in 2018, which was, again, very much part of the communication for the game. So I think there are a lot of people who were expectedly expecting that kind of experience when they bought the game and didn't get it. Like, it's, to me, and I'm going to give you the talking stick now, Nick, but to me, this is very different from every other issue we've had with Blizzard, where I could always, to some people's, in some people's minds, rationalize what they were saying about. I think they were, it was arguably understandable, the decisions they made. Here, I think it is objectively deceptive, and I don't understand how they came to that decision other than, you know, a certain level of disrespect for their player base, which, again, I think all of the other issues that we've had before, there were logical explanations for all of them. Here, I don't see one, and I'm a little bit pissed.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. and this is a saga that's been kind of unfolding for over a week now, since the release, which was actually, like, going back to the very beginning, a really quiet, understated release that actually passed a lot of people by. You know, I've had Reforged pre-ordered because I'm a mug since BlizzCon 2018 when it was first announced. I'm very much enjoying my meat wagon mount in WoW. Thanks for asking. It's turned out to be the best thing about the purchase, and genuinely the only reason I wouldn't refund, because I love that thing. If I end up having paid $40 for that meat wagon mount, I'm okay with that. It's true. I've definitely got more than $40 worth of fun out of it. Anyway, sorry, moving on.
To each their own.
Proper gamer talk here. It actually went under the radar a little bit when it first released. For the first couple of days, no one really cared about it. YouTube creators and things as well, to be fair, until it turned out there was stuff wrong with it. And then suddenly everyone wanted to know about it, which is absolutely fair enough. May also tell you something about our culture as well. And you're right, there's a lot of things that people are justifiably upset about, which then kind of bleeds into some things which people are upset about, which I kind of am a little bit iffy about. But going to your general sentiment of it being one of the first times that you're kind of genuinely disappointed with the way Blizzard has approached something, I don't think you can really disagree with that. I mean, for me, the creative decisions and changes that have gone into it, I might not agree with, but I can understand. So you're talking about the cinematics, which has been a big talking point. And yeah, the Culling of Stratholm cinematic that was shown at BlizzCon 2018 with its new camera angles, much more cinematic, super exciting. And they said at the time that they wouldn't be reworking all of the cinematics. The cutscene. They said at the time they wouldn't be reworking
the cutscenes. Yes, for the cutscenes, right, yes.
Yeah, and they said at the time that they wouldn't be reworking all of the cinematics to the level of the intro cinematic that they introduced at 2018 as well. But the impression was still that they would be doing a lot. That Culling of Stratholm cutscene with all the swooping cameras and close-ups and exciting kind of reimagining of things, is completely absent from the game, which is a baffling decision because that was in the playable demo at 2018. So it wasn't just completed, it was in there. You know, it was in the demo. So to take it away is actually more work, you'd have thought. Because I think the logic there
would be, if they're not going to rework even a little bit the other ones, which I don't buy for a second that it was, oh, we don't want to stray too far from the original one. The whole point of the Reforge, which I think I might title this episode Reforgery. This is a forgery.
Do you know what? I'm just going through YouTube videos here right now and creative titles sort of dumping on Warcraft 3 Reforged. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've seen that one.
You have to have a fresh mind for that.
I think you need the word lies in big letters as well.
That's a little bit too far. But do you know what? Okay, this is a good time to address this. I have a visceral hatred and contempt for that kind of content creation.
Here I am, I'm around your house sitting next to you doing this podcast. I came all the way to Finland for this, and you just go and dump on my content. Well, fine.
My point is, the angry YouTube is an area of the internet that I, first of all, don't associate you with. Thankfully,
you're
opposite. Thank you. I have to lie a little bit to get you to stay. But
lies.
But yeah, the issue is, in this very instance, I agree with the sentiment that they're expressing. I just think the form is really problematic. And it's also a not even boy who cried wolf. It's just that they're always angry. So it's kind of a stopped clock, a broken clock is going to be right twice a day, right? Okay.
Yeah, exhausting. It does result in, because you jump on everything instantly with the kind of minimum of
such hyperbole and
consideration. Yeah. So you get things wrong, unfortunately, if you react to things in the moment. That's just going to happen. I will stick up for the devs a tiny bit on the whole cutscene issue. They said at BlizzCon 2019, in an obscure panel, it was the only Warcraft 3 panel. So if you're interested in the Warcraft 3 Reforged, chances are you would watch that panel. I'm not sure how obscure it was. And it was the official Warcraft 3 Reforged panel.
Right. I say obscure because I think a lot of people who are buying Warcraft 3 do it Reforged. And by the way, we should mention, they did they took a first step towards the only thing that would make sense, which is allowing anyone to get a refund at any point for without any reason. Which I think they should do that.
Oh, but for sure.
The reason I'm saying obscure is that people who bought it on the strength of the communication of the announcement, which was very splashy, and the remade cutscenes were part of the trailer and very much part of what people understandably thought that the cutscenes would be remade to that level.
I totally understand that.
Yeah, would not have seen the panel, but fair enough. Yeah, it wasn't.
That's fair. But my point is that they said at that panel that the reason they wouldn't be redoing all of the cutscenes in that style, because of course all the cutscenes are technically remastered. They're using the new models and in that respect they're as remastered as the rest of the game is. And they said that was a creative, I mean, this is what they say, but they said this was a creative decision because of the backlash against that after it was announced that they would be doing it, which, in fairness to them, although I don't really think that is the real reason, I think it's probably definitely a reason to do with it being less work to do so and it just being a bigger job than they're expecting. In fairness, I do remember that backlash, and it was real, and it did exist when it was announced they'd be redoing all the cutscenes, like the Culling of Strathome. There was a very vocal element of Warcraft 3 fans on the internet who said that was not acceptable, and kind of in the same vein as the No Changes Classic guys. They were like, no, please keep it as it is. We don't want any new reimaginings. We want just a remastered version of the game that we love. Jokes on them, they didn't really get that either. But yeah, it was definitely there. It's not made up. Whereas I don't agree with it if it was a genuine creative decision. I think it's a terrible idea. They should definitely have redone all the cutscenes. Mm. That's cool. They should definitely have left the one that was in there. But there is, you could feasibly believe that as truth, and you could believe it as a creative decision. What the big problem for me is all of the online functionality and all of the online features that are gutted or missing. Now, a lot of those we were told in advance wouldn't be there at launch, like Ladder and Clans. Those are coming later. We always knew those were coming later. A lot of them are just clearly bugs with moving to a new client, which in itself isn't a bad idea. The whole point of Reforged was to kind of rework how it works internally and just make it better for everyone, whether you play classic or not. So I feel like a bit of clarification should be here. It's not the classic game that you can't play anymore. That is still there at the touch of a button. It is just the client, the online client, that is different. So it just affects how you get your custom games out, how you join custom games, how you make custom games, the builder. And there are still things missing from that. There is an element.
Wait. Sorry, I want to be clear about this one, because that's not how I understood it. The classic client is still in there. If you want to launch Warcraft 3 Classic, as it is, if you had already bought it, you will launch the old client, not the Reforged client, which is a little bit tweaked.
That's not true.
Classic client has disappeared.
Yeah, but you don't. I think a lot of people are taking that to mean that you are stuck with the new graphics and things if you don't want them. You can go back to like appearing to play classic at the touch of a button if you want. Obviously, okay. all of the client infrastructure is now moved over, which was again always going to be the case. So there is at the moment an element of that thing of, you know, when you're getting your bathroom renovated, you can't use your bathroom while it's getting done. Then you come back and you've got a lovely new bathroom. So a lot of this will change with the fact
that it's not just a change. Well, I mean, once every functionality is restored, maybe it's going to be better. But in the meantime, the people who were still using those, and maybe a lot of people weren't using those and are saying they were because they want to be angry, but still, you had a functionality that you now cannot use with all of these, you know, clan and ladder. And if you're into Warcraft 3 competitive, that's, you know, a big deal. And
yeah, oh, for sure.
Even if it's not on the principle of it, I have an issue with it.
Yeah, I'm not defending it. I'm just like clarifying it, because a lot of people are just saying there is no ladder or there is no clans. And it's like, yeah, at the moment there's not. But it was always going to be like this. We were told in advance that this was going to be the case. Mm. And we were told back in, like, BlizzCon was the earliest I remember being told that ladders wouldn't be there at launch, but were definitely coming. In a major patch later on. Tournament mode is gone for good, which is annoying and rubbish. There's big issues with the new graphics and new animations, as you mentioned. And coming at it from someone who doesn't use the online client that much and whose interest in Reforged comes purely from someone who wants to play the game from like a lore point of view and just kind of, you know, an interest point of view. That's the biggest thing for me. Like, why am I stuck in 20 FPS graphics for some animations and things? It's horrible and it looks disgusting and it doesn't work very well and it's very clunky. There are issues with promises of a new UI that never really came to fruition, and loads of connection issues, as you can imagine. The builder isn't transferring things, because, you know, you've got millions of custom games that have been made over the years, and the plan was to just create remastered versions of all of the in-game assets that you could use, so it should transfer incredibly easily, you know, and automatically. If you had a custom game that was made with the old assets, well, there's a new version for each of those assets, so it should automatically just upgrade and be fine. That hasn't been the case, and that hasn't moved over. And those are the really big things, is the things that actually affect people's kind of day-to-day gameplay experience. A number of those we were warned about and are part of the plan, which seems like seems like a harsh thing to be super annoyed about, even if it's annoying in the moment. But a lot of them are much bigger issues than that. And that's the big thing, which, and I totally agree with you that it's completely unacceptable and not up to anyone's standards, let alone the standards that we'd like to imagine Blizzard keep themselves to. So this is in no way a defense of anything that's gone down. I'm willing to give the devs a pass for things that they say are creative choices, like the cutscenes, because, okay, fine. But when it comes to actual integral programming, which this is, I don't see how there can be much excuse, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, even, even for those things, I feel like if you add up all of the things that, and maybe I don't follow Warcraft 3 enough, I didn't even buy it, so maybe you can dismiss my opinion on it, but it does feel deceptive in a way that it hasn't in previous issues, and that is what I have a problem. Like, logically, you can line up a lot of reasoning for it, like, not factually, you can line up a lot of reasoning for all of these things. I just feel, taken as a whole, it feels deceptive. Anyway, so the other side of this, which I think we should address, is the mod rules. As I mentioned, part of it is you can't create your own assets. Part of it is you can't use any other company's or person's IP, and that is explicit in the EULA now, which it already was in the StarCraft Remastered EULA, which I can understand. Like, those I have zero problem with. It's like, yes, things have changed, and your old mod that were based on Dragon Ball Z are not going to even be available. That I can live with. I think it makes sense. It's not the same world, and Blizzard is not going to take the risk of being sued because you decided you wanted to use another, Disney's IP and do a Marvel's Avengers game inside Warcraft 3. I'm sorry, that's not how the world works. One that is a little bit more iffy is Blizzard owns everything. Like, they own anything you make in the mods. It's like name, gameplay, assets. Assets, it's their own, but everything is part of Blizzard. And if they want to reuse it in any way, they can, and they don't have to compensate you for anything. It sounds a little bit more harsh. It obviously is understandable because of the Dota issue, which Blizzard has lost and doesn't have any rights on anything when it was created in their ecosystem. I think a company could understandably make a different choice and leave a little bit more of freedom there. I don't think, one thing which is puzzling is that they're saying they own everything, including like gameplay, but gameplay is not something that you can own. Gameplay is not copyrightable. It's something that is akin to fashion or cooking. You can't trademark, you can trademark anything, but you can't copyright a dish or a recipe. You can't copyright a design for a garment. It's the same with gaming, as we've seen all the time. We see that all the time. No one owns the FPS. No one owns the Battle Royale genre, thank God. No one owns the auto chess genre. And it's obviously the same. It would not hold in court for a second if a creator made a mod and liked the concept and then went somewhere else to make another version of that concept of game, and Blizzard couldn't do anything about it. And I don't know how much of it is legalese, but this I have a lot less of a problem with than everything we talked about before. I think this is a little bit of hyperbole and like not being realistic in your complaints, because people have been equally angry about those two aspects. And mm-hmm. This one I'm not like,
yeah, I and that one I'm with you. I have zero patience for people being angry about that one because, for a start, a lot of what you just said is wrong, and that's fine because it's being badly reported. Just a couple of things I picked up on what you said there.
Okay.
The idea that you can't use other people's IPs in your custom games is being misunderstood a lot. It refers specifically to assets from other games. okay, and other media. So if you want to make your Lord of the Rings custom game, you can do that, and you can call it Lord of the Rings custom game, and you can have all your characters called Frodo and give me some other Lord of the Rings people, Gandalf. And that's absolutely fine. That doesn't go against the EULA. What you can't do
Are
is
you sure?
literally take... I'm certain. I've had this cleared. Now, the right is there for Blizzard to take it down if you do call it Lord of the Rings, but they can take it down if you call it Warcraft 3 Reforged. They have the right to take down anything they want.
Well, they can take it down if you call it my mod. Like they can do it on so their platform, that's, which is understandable.
Again, that's quite a deceptive kind of way of looking at it. The EULA is there, and it's I'm reading it right now. It specifically stops you using assets. So that doesn't mean IP. That means literal models or graphics or musics or other game building elements, which, you know, it would be kind of neglectful for them not to include. And they're saying don't steal from other games, which we don't own, which is a pretty fair rule. I mean, if I was, you know, that they have to kind of cover themselves with that. So I mean that's what that I mean, means. And again, that's been widely misreported.
I'm reading it right now, and I think we're quibbling about details because I'm pretty sure it would like it doesn't change our opinion on it, but it does say you represent and warrant that never the content that neither the content you use to create or incorporate into any custom games, nor the compilation, arrangement, or display of such content, collectively the user content, infringes or will infringe any copyright, trademark, patent, trade secret, or other intellectual property right from any third party. I'm pretty sure the name The Lord of the Rings is part of the IP of the Tolkien estate. So I would. The way I'm not a lawyer, maybe you talked to a lawyer and they said it was fine. But when I read, you can't use any other copyright, trademark, patent, or other intellectual IP rights of any third party, I understand this as everything.
Well, the proof is in the pudding. And the thing is, the other thing people forget is this has been the EULA since 2012. Right. And it didn't, I mean, this is the same as the EULA they introduced after the whole Valve incident in 2012. So the other thing is, this isn't new. Mm-hmm. This has been in place since then, 2012.
Yeah, that part definitely, yeah.
And the evidence suggests that they haven't been taking down games called Lord of the Rings with IP infringements and those. And it's the exact same EULA. So I would suggest that that's not really something to worry about.
I completely agree. I think this is legal stuff they have to put in to be able to say, well, you know, it was in the EULA. And it's kind of the inner workings of how these things work. And yeah, so bottom line...
It's like when you see a movie and they say, you know, no characters in this movie are based on real life characters. Yeah. And one of the characters in the movie is called Rupert Murdoch and he's a media baron. And it's like, you know, I think it might be based on a real character, but they just have to put it in there. Mm.
All right. So anyway, that is our thoughts on the Warcraft 3 thing. It took a while, as you could have guessed, but that's what we think, and you can take that home. I don't know what that means.
Don't take it home. Refund it. Send it back.
Yes, exactly. That's a reforgery. I'm going to push that button.
Nice. Can I just say that's excellent?
Thank you.
I might steal it. EULA. I'm stealing it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I grant you a perpetual, transferable, free license to use that punch/joke in any content you see fit.
I mean, that's very kind of you, Patrick, but I don't need it because you don't have an EULA, so I'm just going to take it anyway.
Well, you didn't read what's on my website, which says by appearing on any of Patrick's podcasts, I just said accept all.
Oh, I'm such an idiot.
All right, GeForce Now is available for free, and you can stream any game. There's a paid version, which is only $5 a month, and that gives you a bunch of other perks. GeForce Now is the game cloud streaming service from NVIDIA, which has been in beta for, like, I don't know, 15,000 years, and it's now available for everyone. The free tier is a little bit less capable. You have less priority to get access to the games and servers. And you also get limited play sessions. So you can play for an hour and then it stops. The paid tier, you get 6-hour sessions, I believe. So most people's sessions will be fine. And you get access to RTX graphics cards and higher priority on stuff. I don't think it means you get better like resolution or frame rate that is the same on both offerings, but it does mean you get better quality graphics because you have RTX and stuff like that. So essentially, and also for those who don't know, GeForce Now is not a new platform. It adapts Windows games to be streamable in an easy-ish interface. So when you launch a game, it essentially launches a Windows session with only the launcher or the game itself. So you can play games from Uplay, Steam, Battle.net, and a bunch of other things. But the games have to be a little bit adapted to run on the platform, but it's a very small formality to do it. Unfortunately, Control, which is a game that takes full advantage of RTX ray tracing technology, is not available yet. I'm sure it will be soon. Have you had a chance to give it a try? Do you know if this is a Stadia / Shadow PC killer?
I'm afraid not. No.
All right.
I don't have a GTX 2080 Ti so that I can stream my games. Do you know what I mean? I've got it so that I can run it on my beast of a computer with its really cool LGB lighting. So I'm going to be a very late adopter to this. So I'm going to need you to enthuse for me and convince me.
Right, because the thing is, just like all of those other streaming services, unlike things that we are being promised with xCloud and the subscription services that would be attached to it, you need to buy the games. It's not like Stadia when you need to rebuy or buy them specifically for Stadia, but it's not a subscription service in the sense that you would get a bunch of games available already. It's the games you already own on the Windows platform, which most of us own a ton, so we already have a ton of games available there. My experience with it was not optimal. I think we don't have servers close to where I live in Finland. My experience with Shadow PC and Stadia is really good from where I am. It's not great for GeForce Now. It was like 1280 resolution, and like 30 FPS was the best I could get. But that might be because I'm not very close to it. The UI is also not awesome. Like, I had to manually re-log into the Battle.net launcher every time I would launch the service, every single time. And it would lock me in French when I set it to English again every time. So that was a little bit frustrating of an experience. And I didn't find a way to do anything about that. But that being said, it completely works. And it is free. And if you are in a location that has a better version quality of the service, it is really awesome because you can have your Mac or your Android phone, and I'm sure soon it will be available on iOS as well, and you just press a button and you start playing, and it actually works, even if it doesn't work super well. It does make me understand why Stadia, which, oh my god, they continue to be the worst version of that service it could possibly be, even though I still believe in the core of it, and I think once it's free it will be incredible. But I understand why Stadia said, we need this to be a platform for which you develop games, because trying to run Windows games in that format, it is clunky. Sometimes you get the launcher that displays in a weird way, and then you have to log in, and like, I understand why they did it. Now, it might still be Stadia's downfall because games don't come to the platform, we don't know. But from a usability point of view, I am much more understanding to Google's decision to make this a platform for which you have to port things over than I was before I saw GeForce Now. Now, again, that being said, GeForce Now works for free or for $5 a month, which is super cheap. And it works really well. I still prefer Shadow, I think, because you run an actual PC. You have to update it. You have to download it, all of it. But in, again, in my short experience, it worked a little bit better. But it's more polished. But there are... there's definitely a way that NVIDIA polishes this to the point that it is, on all counts, the choice if you want to stream your existing games. So,
we'll see. And I think from a kind of like an ideological point of view, that's what you want as a consumer. You want the idea from something like Shadow or like GeForce Now that you're essentially just renting a really beefy PC to play a game on.
And like, to play a game you already own.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And like that's what's appealing to me about it. And I would imagine most other players as well. So that from if I had to choose one to go with now, I'd totally be going with the Shadow and instead of Stardew. Mm. You know? So yeah, it's interesting looking at it. It's definitely the future, but I fear that future because I love buying bits for my PC.
I think you'll still very much be doing that for a very long time. Especially if you have...
Patrick, and if I don't, I'm going to blame you.
I should say, however, that Shadow PC is much more expensive. So there's that to take into account. As I joked on DTNS, it's infinitely more expensive than the free version of GeForce Now. And it's
a math joke. I like it.
It's good, yeah. It's the new version of Shadow PC, which is going to be available like in the next few weeks, is 3 times more expensive than the $5 a month thing for GeForce Now, and it also doesn't have RTX level capability. The RTX level capability version of Shadow PC has been delayed, it seems like significantly, months if not a year, which it was supposed to launch in February. So I was a little bit disappointed with that, but yeah, so it's the early days of that technology, and again, it's showing that there are many ways of implementing it, and the best, the most user-friendly should win out. I think, let's say I would be surprised if the most user-friendly version doesn't end up being xCloud linked to the Game Pass, but we'll see. Bombshell, for those who care, who probably aren't like most gamers, but Dan Houser, one of the two co-founding brothers of Rockstar Games, famed creators of GTA and Red Dead Redemption, leaves the company. He was on a sabbatical since the release of Red Dead Redemption 2 a little bit under a year ago. And over a year ago. And he's now actually leaving the company. We don't know why. We don't know what he's going to be doing. But kind of following the usual template when these things happen, it takes a sabbatical of a year, and then when execs have shown that the company can run without him, he announces he's leaving so that there isn't a huge panic. It happens all the time. It's a pretty big deal because Rockstar is arguably the biggest gaming company in the world. They don't release many games, but all of them are earth-shattering. And he is the creative genius slash driving force behind the impossibly ambitious games. He's the main writer, and yeah, it's a big deal for that company, which is a big deal for the industry. I'm not sure I care hugely.
You sound like you care. I cared at first because I was like, wait, Dan Houser? That's the one that Daniel Radcliffe plays in Game Changers, the BBC Two drama from 2015 about you know, Grand Theft Auto. And then I realized, no, that was Sam Houser and that I'd got my Housers mixed up.
Yeah, the brother is still there.
Yeah, yeah. Daniel Radcliffe still works for Rockstar Games. That's the important thing I think we need to take from this. No, Ian Kier-Attard has left, Sam Houser. So who wasn't as important in that
Dan,
show.
Dan, not Sam, Dan.
No, Dan. Yeah, yeah, Dan
you
has
said
left.
Sam again. Yes.
No, well, you're just getting them mixed up, though. And yeah, Dan has left. Poor old Dan. But because my entire experience of knowing who the people that work for any gaming company are is based around, you know, film media, and he wasn't so important in that show, then I've always seen him as not so important. And it's only actually kind of reading up on the stories as they've been coming out in sort of games media this week that I've been struck by just how important he was as part of the creative force of it. And you're right, he was the creative one in many ways. Which is, I mean, is that going to affect games that they've got coming out, do you think? Or
I mean, the way, again, I don't really understand. I don't know exactly how it worked internally, but the image we've had is that he was the force pushing towards impossible things to be made reality. So the impression I would have would be that maybe future Rockstar games won't necessitate, like, 2 years of constant crunch to, like, push the level of detail so far that you're the one that people always refer to, your horse's balls will, you know, contract when it's cold. Like, maybe things will be a little bit less crazy in that sense. But who knows? You know, maybe Sam is just as perfectionist as Dan, and maybe the entire ethos of the company is that kind of perfectionism. So we don't know. But that's, if anything, you know, if there's something that I would kind of expect to happen, maybe that would be the thing.
What if Dan was the dialogue guy and Sam was the horseball guy? So now we've only got the horseballs.
Horseballs everywhere all the time. All horseballs all the time. Maybe.
I'd buy that game.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Well, you know, if you like games that are a little bit weird, I wanted to mention this about Stadia. There's a crossbike game sponsored by Monster that is available on Stadia for $60, where that same probably subpar game is available for $50 on Steam. So there you go. Stadia is a huge success. Oh, and they did announce that the free version is going to be coming in the next few months, so not now. So there you go. The free version of Stadia, of course. Nintendo, you know what? All of these companies might be making a lot of money, but Nintendo is making a lot of money. I'm not saying they're making more, but they sold like 20 million Nintendo Switches this year, even though it's not the year is not even complete. They increased their forecast to that on that. They are on the trajectory of the Wii U almost. The only console that sold more, I believe, is at that stage of its life is like the PlayStation 2 and the Wii U. Pokemon Sword and Shield is by far the best launch of a Pokemon game for like the entire history of the franchise. I think the game that sold the most was 17 million, and that was over the life of the game. So they're already at 16 million for Sword and Shield. So Dexit Schmexit, I guess. Ring Fit Adventure sold 2.17 million. Which, it's a really good game, but I was surprised it was that much. 16 million. Do you know how many games, how many units the best-selling Zelda game had sold before Breath of the Wild?
More than five?
Of course. Breath of the Wild sold 16 million to date.
Right.
Would you say, okay, I'm not going to force you to answer. The best-selling game before that was 8 million for a Zelda game. They are already at 16 million for Breath of the Wild. It's wild. It's like the success of the Switch and all of that is kind of crazy. And so, yeah, good on Nintendo. They were
and
saying,
rightfully so. I think, I say this whenever I get a chance, but I think the Switch is my favorite console of the last 10 years. You know, I think it's a beautiful thing. And it managed, from a commercial point of view, it's captured that thing. I always think of it as being, it's the first console that's managed to replicate what music systems did. You know how, like, when vinyl went to kind of cassette, everyone had to rebuy their entire music collection on cassette because that's just what you listen to now. And then when it changed to CD, everyone was like, "Ah, now I'm going to rebuy my entire music collection on PC." And then it went to Spotify, and everyone was like, "Yeah, okay." And you do it all again. You do it all on you know, iPlayer.
You remake your playlists and stuff. Yeah,
absolutely. Yes, and the Switch is the first console that's done that. It's come out, and you've gone, look, the actual draw with this console is the console itself rather than the games, really, to a large degree. So you're going to want this, and you're going to want to buy all of the games that you already own again on the Switch, because now you can play it on the Switch. and there's no other console's ever managed to do that, which is why it's so genius and why it'll be the best and most successful console of all time, and we'll all be happy about it. And yay, Nintendo, and hooray.
I think this is, you know, Nintendo is one of those rare companies where, even though they are a giant conglomerate and make billions of dollars selling you stuff you sometimes don't need and pushing the limit on what they can sell you, we all love them. And in a way that we don't love the other companies. And that's, we're all happy for it. And they are, I think they are maybe a little bit more respectful than others in some respect.
In some ways, yeah.
I mean,
not respectful just, in the way of making any online services work or anything like that. Respectful in other ways.
I mean, even on the money side, they just announced a subscription service for the Fire Emblem mobile game, which is like blatantly pay to win. Like, it's adding gameplay advantages to the game. Anyway, that's a mobile thing. We true real gamers don't care
when,
about those.
When Nintendo do stuff like that, though, it's noticeable how much of a bigger pass the games community give them. It's kind of like when your granddad says something racist and you go, "Oh, granddad, well, you would say that, wouldn't you, granddad?"
You know, Nintendo, it's funny. I was saying that because of something a little bit different. I won't get into it, but and
your racist granddad, I guess.
Yes, exactly. No, but something about Nintendo, and a bunch of people were like, "Oh no, it's just we're just as harsh on Nintendo as we are on others." And I'm glad that you agree with me that we give Nintendo such a pass, and I'm happy to do it as well. But they announced, Furukawa, the president, announced that there won't be a new Switch model in 2020, like the rumored Pro model. I am certain that the rumors come from the work they have been doing planning to release in 2020, as they do for all of their portable consoles. But they were like, all right, we're still selling the Switch like so much. Let's ride this one a little bit longer, and probably 2021 they'll, your thing about rebuying the games, Nintendo is an expert at making us rebuying the consoles as well as the games, so we'll all buy a Switch Pro.
That's
in 2021.
Truth.
They also said, it was funny, they don't consider the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X to be competitors to the Switch. They won't have a significant impact on the Switch, which I completely agree
right about that. They've managed to like just step out of the whole console wars thing with the Switch, and I think that's really great. Fantastic.
And talking about those bigger manufacturers, Spencer was saying that the real competitors for Microsoft now for the Xbox are, I'm sorry, Amazon and Google. Not Sony or Nintendo. They're all like, oh, we're not playing in the same. We don't care about the other. I mean, I think there's a little bit less of a truth to what Spencer was saying, but it's true that they don't care about the same things anymore. Their subscription, Xbox brand, ambient gaming, I think, as we coined the term. We own it, copyright it. No EULA can say otherwise. Ambient gaming is their thing. You can play their games everywhere, anywhere. They don't care about the consoles. So in that context, of course, Google and potentially Amazon are their competitors. Sony is not in the same. And even Sony is going to be using Microsoft's cloud, maybe for PlayStation Now, but definitely for everything else. So they are winning on all fronts.
Yeah, a bit disingenuous not to mention PlayStation and that, but yeah, the sentiment is understandable for sure.
And by the way, Xbox Game Pass continues to be a really cool thing. Final Fantasy 15 and Wolfenstein Youngblood are available in February. So, it's funny, it's all of those games. I think a lot of people are thinking people are not buying games anymore because they think they will come to those services like PlayStation Plus or Xbox Game Pass. And maybe are people not buying games anymore because of this? Surely there are some people who are going to think for some games, well, maybe I won't buy it because it will come to one of the services down the line in a few months. Maybe it's true to an extent, but I think the large majority of people who subscribe to those services are core gamers who love games. As an illustration, PlayStation Plus has 36 million subscribers, which is a third of the installed base. And PlayStation Plus is necessary to play online. So people who pay for those things, it's a small minority of the player base. And I think those gamers, if there's a game they want to play, they're going to buy it when it comes out. They don't want to play it in 6 months.
So I'd love to see some figures on that, because I don't think it impacts at all. It's a bit like when you see a film come out and you think to yourself, I can't really be bothered going to cinema to see that. I'll wait till it comes on Netflix. And maybe you will watch it on Netflix, but the truth is you wouldn't have gone to the cinema to see it in the first place. So it hasn't affected that side of things.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that is exactly the mindset of things. And for those games, the games that come to those platforms, I mean, maybe I'm a little bit different because I do it for work as well. So sometimes I do buy games that I don't maybe really want to play just to try them out to know what they're about. But for a large part, it's like when those games arrive, it's games that I was thinking I didn't really want to play it. But now that it's on that service, maybe I want to play it. I definitely don't want to pay for it. But now that it's on the service, I play it anyway. So that's how I look at this. What else? PlayStation 5 is not being revealed now. Sony had to come out because there were rumors started by the old reliable Reddit. I'm being cheeky. There are definitely leaks that are that end up coming true that leak to Reddit and other places. But there was persistent rumors that Sony was going to reveal the PlayStation 5 on February 5th. That didn't come to pass. So the rumors swirling around were thinking that in February something was going to happen. Sony came out and said, we're not ready to reveal the PlayStation 5 yet. So that what that tells me is that might be something that happens, I don't know. We're at least a couple of months away. And another interesting thing, it was a survey, it doesn't mean anything, but PlayStation is asking, Sony is asking if people would like to see PlayStation 4 remote play on the Switch. Remote play being the ability you have to play your games on your console streamed on a device in your home. That's actually a feature that many people forget about because I don't think it's very much suited to that use, but it's possible to stream to your, I believe even to your PC. Is there an app on the PC? But to your phone, definitely. And of course, people would love to do that on the Switch. But I think that is interesting in itself. It wouldn't get a lot of use. But if this is a backdoor to see if people would be interested to play streaming games on the Switch for PlayStation Now, for example, that is extremely
interesting. Yeah, now you're talking.
Yeah. Definitely. Although I have issues with the UI. You know, a UI designed for a giant TV on a tiny screen, it usually doesn't work super well, so it's not the primary way of doing it.
I have a giant TV, and when I play my PlayStation, I have to move my chair right up to it anyway, because the fonts and text on PlayStation games are so tiny.
Very often, teeny tiny.
I can't do it. I'm sitting on my sofa. I'm like, yeah, but a Spider-Man, here we go. And I can't do it. I have to get a little chair and sit as I would for a PC right in front of it. That would be a worry for me.
Definitely.
Because I'm an old man with no eyes.
Listen, you can buy one of those little magnifying lens attachments to your Switch like we had on the Game Boy. And that would
be a magnifier and light combo.
Yes. I think I saw something a few days ago for the Switch that looked like that. So it might exist.
Wow. Yes, okay, fine, I'll do that then.
So you'll play your PlayStation 5 games on your Switch with that.
Sounds good.
And a bunch of tidbits to carry us over to the end of the show. The wonderful 101 Remastered was announced by Platinum Games. I never played The Wonderful 101, but it seems a lot of people are very excited about this. It's being kickstarted. So, there you go. Are you a wonderful 101 fan?
No.
All right.
But I'm looking at the Kickstarter now. It looks great. I'll give it a quid.
Excellent. Dota Underlords is coming out for real on February 25th. So those auto chess games are still a thing. EA made a lot of money. Once again, you know, I like the subverted expectations thing. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order made a lot of money, more than they expected. I think we kind of take it for granted that, you know, it's like, duh, of course, single-player Star Wars game. It's going to sell, you dumb EA.
Bought out a week before the movie releases as well.
Yeah.
A new Star Wars movie.
I guess, and I guess on that one, it's probably, yeah, it's pretty obvious. But it's, you know, I won't fault them for being conservative in their estimates. But they also made a lot of money with live services and income from the, you know, microtransactions. And that is something, again, that we take as, you know, not to relaunch into the whole conversation about microtransactions. But I really think, again, to that idea that we are a minority of gamers, I really think, especially for EA, a game like FIFA relies a lot for revenue on Ultimate Team, which is essentially a loot box-driven game. And I think a lot of people like us assume that people hate it, that every player hates it. My anecdotal experience and the financial experience is that a lot of people play it, and I don't think they're being forced to play it with a gun to their head. A lot of people play Ultimate Team, and they buy card packs and exchange, you know, they change their roster and they get good players, and like, and I think they enjoy it.
We've had this conversation on this very show before, so I don't want to go over too much old ground, but yeah, we like to think that, you know, Ultimate Team and stuff is something that, you know, EA are pretty sneaky about, and that they sneak it in there and people are going to spend money on it without even realizing. It's not, to a lot of people that buy and play FIFA and really enjoy it, it is one of the main draws of the game. Yeah. They like it. They like, gambling is fun, man. Building up a collection, like opening card packs is fun. You know, football stickers has always been fun. It's gambling in the exact same way. People just like it. It's like a genuine feature that they look for in that game.
And then
I don't like it either, but you know, that's how it is.
The next step in that conversation is it moral? Sure, they like it, but is it moral? And that's a whole other conversation.
Well, that's a step that I purposely avoided. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Sure. And I'm not going to get into it. But yeah, that's the next.
But,
question.
You know, people smoking ask, and drinking is very popular as well. And
yeah. And on that point, I think we would disagree as the characterization of that for these things. I don't think it's quite as it doesn't hurt people, certainly not in the same way. So anyway,
you just wait until your sum works out how your credit card works. you might be changing your tune,
maybe. So then let me ask you this: would you rather he played FIFA Ultimate Team, well, maybe not, but your child, or start smoking and drinking?
Ah, well, no, that's a very good point. But yeah, if he, I think the conversation might change if he was using my credit card to buy his drinks and smokes. You know, if he suddenly comes up to me one day and goes, "Oh, Dad, I think I accidentally spent £2,000 on Wonderful 101 Remastered and all its microtransactions, but I've got a really lovely cape now," I'm not going to pat him on the head and go, "Well, at least you're not smoking and drinking."
All right.
So it's a win for everyone.
That is fair enough. You know what? I hope that the game studio that Wizards of the Coast is creating is going to make games that are so awesome that both our children are going to be playing them in a few years. And we will love that and love them and love the games for all of it. That is what I hope. And honestly, what took Wizards of the Coast so long to create a video game studio? I understand it's very different from what they're doing to begin with, but it's such a perfect fit. I'm like, D&D and Magic the Gathering are like part of the, they're almost video games in paper form. So Archetype Entertainment is the name of the studio. And I'm actually surprisingly excited about that cold corporate announcement of a studio opening.
Yeah, I'm excited too, because I'm a chump and I'm an optimist. And yeah, at the moment I'm super excited and I can't wait. Obviously, with BioWare people as well.
Exactly, and, yeah. It's BioWare people. They're going to create new IPs, and apparently it's going to be sci-fi, so that it's not going to be based on the existing IPs that Wizards of the Coast owns. So that is also like, it seems like it's taking the right direction. So yeah. I'm excited. And that is about it. Thank you so much, Nick, for joining me for those super exciting conversations. If people want more from you, where would they go?
They would want to check out Taliesin and Evertel, who is my wife and, you know, co-worker and colleague. And you can check us out on YouTube and on Twitch and on Twitter. Why not? We'll see you there.
Excellent. The link to the Twitter account will be in the show notes. For me, it is NotPatrick on Twitter, as well as Facebook and Instagram. If you want to listen, if you want to see the path, the dangerous, treacherous path I have to walk to get to the well at which I draw the water that I drink, like, it is video game platformer dangerous levels. Right?
Or, yeah.
I am like, I have a
or at the very least Death Stranding levels.
All right, maybe that's more fair. So on Instagram you can find that. I'm not Patrick over there. You can comment and discuss everything we said at frenchspin.com on the article for this episode. And anything else you feel to like you want to tell us, please do so. We will be happy to read it. We will be back in about a couple of weeks, and until then, we bid you adieu.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.